Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Caroline Fenton is here. Corey Curtis, News 2 in about 10 minutes. He'll join us. Predators lose 4-1 on the road at Carolina last night. They'll finish up the series with Carolina tomorrow night. And what I think is a big game. I think everybody thinks it's a big game. I said it was a big game yesterday. They lost. They lost a big game. By the way, Money Puck dropped their odds, Caroline, from 62% to make the playoffs to 55.3 after last night's loss in Dallas win.
Ooh.
So we think these games, you know, hey, it's Carolina. Because I heard the Midday Show talking about Chicago, the three games with them next week, and they're like, these three games are big games. I'm like, yo.
They're all big games.
These Carolina games are some big games. And again, Dallas has three games in hand because of their COVID issues and, you know, the winter storm they had. They play on May 1st. The Predators and Stars play their last matchup on May 1st. Here's what they have between now and then. Nashville has at Carolina, good team. Chicago, at Chicago, at Chicago. Florida, good team. Dallas has Columbus, Detroit, 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 Carolina, good team. Carolina, good team. Tampa Bay, good team. So those three games in hand are pretty good, but they're going to win. I mean, they're going to win when they play Detroit. I know Chicago didn't win last night playing Detroit, but Dallas is going to win some of those games. So I was thinking about last night's game, and was it kind of a playoff game? Did it have the feel of a playoff game last night? If the season were over today, this is the most likely matchup. That would be the matchup, Carolina and Nashville. And I think that Carolina and Nashville is the most likely matchup. And as Willie Donick brought up, I do think there is a point to why Carolina is taking every game seriously. The winner of the division avoids Tampa Bay, unless it is Tampa Bay. But if you win the division, if you're Florida or you're Carolina, you have to think to yourself, we avoid Tampa Bay and we get Nashville instead of a better team in the first round. So even though last night the Predators were without Philip Forsberg and without Matt Duchene and without Elie Tolvanen and without Dante Fabro and without Alexander Carrier, and they could be that way in a playoff series, I still looked at last night like game one of a playoff series. I looked at it like, hey, game one. And this is where I'm trying to figure out if this is good or bad. And the reason I say this is, if the Predators were to play a best of seven with Carolina, the first two games would be in Raleigh. And it would be a lot like this, right? You play on a Thursday, then you play on a Saturday. Then you fly to Nashville, and you play on a Tuesday or Monday, and then you play on Wednesday or Thursday. That's what it would look like. If the Predators lost the first game of a playoff series to Carolina, where they were beaten by the better team, admitted by the coach, admitted by the team broadcasters, but only outshot 29-20, even in hits, almost even in the faceoff circle, Carolina blocked more shots. They took it away more. They gave it away more. If you were to lose a playoff game 4-1, I don't think we would be signaling that the playoff series is over. Because I think the goal would be simple going into Carolina or Tampa Bay, which would be to take one of those two games. So how do we feel about this situation in the season and trying to project if this were a playoff game with the way they lost 4-1 last night, and knowing they'd get a crack to steal home ice by winning game two tomorrow night? Eric Halla, after the game, was asked about trying to be ready for Saturday night. Take a listen.
Eric, I know you're not going to win every game, but when you're in a stretch like this where you're winning more often than not, when you do have a loss, how has this team been able to bounce back after games like this?
Yeah, you got to go back and kind of look at the things that make you successful. Look at the things you can do better, and then make sure that you take that and take it to the next game. There's going to be another game on Saturday, and we got another crack at them.
How would you feel about Saturday? How would you feel if this were a playoff series and they lost game one to Carolina 4-1?
I think that we're looking at it like a playoff series because we looked at it yesterday kind of like a series. We didn't look at it as a game. We looked at it as an overall series that was dependent on one game or another. But if I was going into a playoff series, especially with this team that overcame so quickly, the Predators lost to Tampa Bay 3-0. A couple days later, they turned around and beat them 7-2. So this team is able to bounce back pretty quickly after a loss. So a 4-1 loss where in one period the Predators looked really great and two, they were outplayed 100%. I wouldn't feel super excited about it, but I don't think that the Predators' chances are gone.
Okay, what if they were to lose Game 1 and Game 2 in Carolina and come back to Bridgestone Arena for Game 3? Are you a believer in the old saying that a series isn't a series until the home team loses?
I would say if they were coming back to Bridgestone Arena, I would still feel hopeful.
Even down 2-0?
It depends on what the second loss looked like. If the Predators looked on Saturday how they looked last night, I don't know if I would feel incredibly hopeful, but I would feel better knowing that they were coming back on home ice. But last night, they were just outplayed. They just were playing a better team.
I mean, we kept hearing they were beaten by the better team. I would agree. I mean, the broadcaster said it last night on the broadcast. They were talking. I mean, Hal Gill was talking about Carolina, and you know how much sometimes it just pains me to agree with Hal, but he said after the game, sometimes you got to tip your cap to Carolina.
You give Carolina credit. They did exactly that. They were first on pucks. They were winning battles. They had great sticks. They were disrupting plays. The Preds didn't have close puck support, so they couldn't move it past them. The D zone looked like they were puck watching. They were out of sync and giving up shots in the slot. It could have been a different game, but it wasn't. And that's sometimes what you have to deal with against a good team like the Canes.
And he's not wrong. But there has to be an improvement on Saturday. And I would say that if Saturday's game was a game two and it looked like yesterday's game, I would probably lose all hope of beating Carolina in a playoff series to begin with. I mean, I think that like right now, if you were to play Carolina, and I forget what the numbers guy at the Athletic said, but I think it was like 67%, that it would likely to go to Carolina. You probably would have to play better in game one to not put me at about 85% after last night. And then you'd probably have to win game two to lower it down, or else I'm probably thinking 90% chance Carolina's taking the series. So they're up against, I mean, Carolina is a good team. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Text line, we did not get to all of your Preds texts. Caroline, what is in the text line as far as the Preds texters are concerned after last night's game?
Yeah, one texter said the last night's game was big because they're all big now. They may not make the playoffs, but as long as Saro stays hot, we have a shot at making a playoffs. Meaning the Predators. If Saro is not hot, there's no way that they can make the playoffs. Do you agree with that?
So, yeah, I think it's probably true. I mean, I think everything this team does is dependent upon how good the goalies are. When the goalie's hot, you can get to the Stanley Cup final. When the goalie's hot, you can win a Vezina trophy and have the President's trophy and the best record in the league. When the goalie stinks, the coach gets fired. I mean, I think that we've seen that over the last couple of years. Saros has to play well in order for this team to have any chance against these teams. I just keep wondering if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, are people going to be mad about it? Or are people open to that possibility? Did they leave Monday with the possibility of them not making the playoffs as acceptable? Because I didn't.
I think at this point, if the Predators don't make the playoffs, that's absolutely unacceptable, and that will be the clearest sign that David Poile did not make the correct decision at the trade deadline. I think you go on this incredible run for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it may be, and get the city really excited, get fans really excited. For what? For a few games to have proven something during the regular season? I think that if this team does not make the playoffs, something drastic needs to happen, because that is absolutely unacceptable. And I don't know what that thing is, but changes would need to be made.
Corey Curtis, News 2, is our guest coming up next. His thoughts on last night's game. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We got a lot to give away, including Preds tickets for Monday night. So we got a lot to give away today. So I'm just going to start doing it now. It's Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's the People's Day. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025, and you'll win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House, located at 121 Opry Mills Drive here in Nashville. 615-737-1025. Good luck at winning that. Corey Curtis, News 2, next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Each side gets a third period goal, but the Hurricanes emerge as 4-1 winners in this one here tonight.
Predators lose to Carolina. Again, if the playoffs started today, that would be your first round matchup. Yesterday, the Predators were 62% likely to make the playoffs. Today, 55.3. Dallas knocked off Columbus last night. The Predators are now, according to MoneyPuck.com, supposed to finish with 62 points. They were supposed to finish with 63 as of yesterday. Dallas, 61, up from 60. So now the projection is less than 2-point difference between Nashville and the Dallas Stars. Dallas's next five games: Columbus, Detroit, 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 Detroit. Corey Curtis joins us, News 2. Corey, what have you made of the week in the Nashville Predators? No trades on Monday, as you predicted on the show last Friday. No trades on Monday. They spanked Tampa Bay with a backup goalie on Tuesday. They get beat. I don't want to say they got smacked last night. They got beat fairly by a better team last night in Carolina. What do you make of it?
Carolina's really good. And you played Tampa, Carolina back-to-back games, and you got 2 points. That's not terrible. I heard your house money speech, and I agree they weren't necessarily playing with house money in that game. But the fact is, when you look at the schedule and you see those back-to-back games, you would take 2 points out of those two games. More than winning and losing, Jared, I'm looking at how do they play? Because I thought they were set up last night for a big letdown game, and I don't think they gave us a big letdown game. We didn't get their very best performance, but I think Carolina has something to do with that. They're now 0-4-1 against Carolina. It's obviously a tough matchup for them.
What do you think the importance of Saturday's game is, both from the making the playoff standpoint and from the idea of having to play those guys again in that building, if that is in fact how it shakes out for the playoffs?
Well, I think you need to prove you can beat them at some point. I mean, I'm not going to get too carried away, but, you know, the games, you know, I'd like to see overtime, okay? I could handle an overtime loss, but I need to see some more level play against them. You know, as far as projecting points and how everyone's going to do, that never goes the way you think it's going to go. Chicago got whacked by Detroit last night. I know that you assured us that was a Chicago win going in, but, I mean, that's just not the way it is, and it never goes the way you expect it to. So, again, I just look at how do they play, and, you know, are they going to continue to play the way that they have played? Because if they do, I'll take the result no matter what it is.
What do you think about David Poile? Doesn't go for it, doesn't sell on Monday. We thought that was what was going to happen. I feel like now they've put the playoffs. I never went into the season, Corey, thinking about the playoffs because I felt like they had issues they had to resolve. The core of the group, who really is qualified to stay here and who do they need to find a way to move on from? The coach, can he coach? I think we've learned our lesson with John Hines. I think he can coach. You know, that has been solved for me. The young players, Fabro, Tolvanen, maybe Tomasino, maybe David Ferentz, who is kind of a key core guy going forward. Can they be core NHL players? Those were the questions entering the season. But after they didn't sell Granlin, Cousins, or Holla the other night, I said to myself, now I feel like the playoffs are a tangible goal and not making the playoffs would be a disappointment. How important is making the playoffs right now for this organization and for David Poile?
Well, I think the fact that he didn't sell says it is. I mean, it says making the playoffs, these were the numbers like a decade ago. A home playoff game meant like $900,000. Hmm. And, you know, to the Predators, who don't have the huge radio and TV money that other teams do, those home playoff gates are big, especially if you can get into round two. But I think also for this team, it would be very symbolic, like you talk about answering those questions and turning a corner because they didn't look like a playoff team. And to get to the playoffs would be a very huge victory for this team. And then you see, you know, how the chips kind of fall. But look, you know, the players that we've talked about trading away, you know, the ones you just brought up, Granlund and Holla, Ekholm's name came up forever. Those guys are playing really well, okay? So you would be trading away guys who are playing really well as you're trying to get to the playoffs. I think if he had good offers for some guys that maybe they feel like they can move on without, he probably would have taken them. But those guys, don't have much value right now for the contracts that they're playing under, and they're hard to move. But these guys who are cheaper on better deals, who are playing hard and playing well, it's tough to move on from them when they're the guys driving the train.
It's just, I guess this is going to sound rude, and I don't mean it to be rude. But
to
I
me
just
or
feel
someone
like,
else? I'm trying to brace myself.
Well, kind of to the organization.
Okay.
If they make the playoffs, I think anything outside of that is just icing on the cake. You know, if the Predators make the playoffs and they get beaten by Carolina in five games, they get beaten by Tampa in four games, like, I'm not going to love it, but okay. You know, at least they made the playoffs in what looked like through the first half just a dumpster fire of a season. That's pretty remarkable in and of itself. If they don't sell on Granlund, Halla, and Cousins, and they don't end up making the playoffs, I think there have to be consequences for this group. I think there have to be consequences on the roster, in the front office. Like, I think there have to be consequences. Because you're telling us, you sold to us and the fans the idea that you should make the playoffs when you didn't sell those assets each of the last 2 years. I mean, that's a lot of picks that they didn't get for Craig Smith, Mikhail Granlund this year, Eric Halla, and Nick Cousins. Those are a lot of picks you didn't get. And I think there needs to be some level of consequence if this team doesn't make the playoffs.
Listen, I understand what you're saying. But again, to me, it goes to more how are they playing. If they play well and they don't make it, then they don't make it. You know, they played well, they didn't make it. And that happens sometimes. I feel like if they continue to play the way they're playing, that things will work out and they will get there. But we will see. I'm not prepared to punish a guy for not breaking up a team that had won 13 out of 16 games. I mean, look, I understand draft picks are awesome. I mean, you look at some of the players that Preds have gotten in round two, Shea Weber, Roman Josi, Kevin Klein, you know, they've loaded up in round two in the past. They've done well there. So those picks certainly help you moving forward. I totally get that. But to me, and I know there are a lot of national pundits who still feel like, you know, the shrewd move, the professional move was to sell and load up. But I continue to look at the history of the National Hockey League. And that is Edmonton getting to the Cup Finals as an 8 seed. The Predators getting to the Finals as an 8 seed. The Kings winning it all, getting in on the very last day. It's a crapshoot. And the guys and the way they're playing, I understand why they looked at those dice and said, yeah, let's roll them. Because we would like to get to the playoffs. Because when this year started, we were really worried about the direction of our hockey team. There were certain radio hosts in town talking about 2, 3, 4 years to get the thing rebuilt and put back together. And how long was it going to take? And to be there before the season is over, and you've learned a lot about the young players on your hockey team, to where, like I said, even if you don't make the playoffs, but you play your style the rest of the way, you just come up a point or two short, it's disappointing, but you see a path to get where you're going. Now, yes, it helps to reload with more talent and more good young players. I understand that. But you're playing for a goal, and only 16 teams are going to get to that goal.
Corey Curtis, News 2, is our guest. I would say I have a hot take for you, Corey, which is Matt Duchene said on the midday show, or excuse me, the morning show in his weekly appearance, that he thinks that he'll be back next week, which would be nice. Mm-hmm. You know, the Chicago games and, you know, the home stretch. I think we're going to see a better Matt Duchene than we've seen at any point in his tenure with the Predators. And I don't know what I'm basing that off of. I don't know if it's that guys, whether it's Cunning or Ellis or Josi or whomever.
Every player who has come back from injury played better than beforehand. Okay? That's very simple. Because they know if they don't, they are not going to play.
And I think Duchene is a special case because I think this is his last chance. You know, like that. Yeah. If he comes back, and he still stinks, then I think he's gone at the end of the year. I think he is gone. And then literally pennies on the dollar, but they will make that sacrifice before that modified no movement kicks in. I think he's gone if he doesn't improve. I think he will improve when he comes back from injury. I know that's a really loaded take, but what do you think of it?
No, look, I think I like the second half of the take better, that it's his last chance, because I agree with you. if he, they're not going to sit around and hope that he produces after this. Okay. He's had chances. And I feel like, you know, I feel like his effort level has been pretty good when I've seen him on the ice. He just hasn't produced. And in his career, he has produced, which makes it such a mystery. But you have young guys who are way cheaper, who play with a ton of edge and a ton of speed and a ton of grit, who are producing for you, who, because my next question was going to be, who are you taking off the ice? Who do you want to take off the ice for Matt Duchene to play right now?
Well, I'll tell you right now, man, I'm taking Tanner Jeannot off the ice. I'm taking, if Matthew Olivier comes back, I'm taking him off the ice. I mean, there's a lot of players I'm taking off the ice to put Matt Duchene
back.
Yeah,
I mean, these are fourth liners, right?
Right. Like, I'm taking Rym Pitlick. I'm taking Rocco Grimaldi. Like, yeah. That's who I'm taking off the ice. I'm not taking any good players off the ice.
Okay. Well, again, those guys are all giving you something, all right? They're giving you a body, they're giving you speed, and they're giving you effort. And at a minimum, you've got to get that from Duchene when he comes back. And I would love to see it because, you know, you think about if Forsberg can come back and play the way he was playing, and if Duchene can catch fire kind of the way that Arvidsson's caught fire, you know, then suddenly you're a team people probably don't want to play very much.
Sure. I mean, I look at the power play last night. Caroline brought up the point about, you know, the power play wasn't very good last night.
Yeah, well, they don't have anybody to put on it.
I was going to say, you know, Tolvanen and Forsberg, that's like saying your bullpen's not very good and your two closers that are all-stars are out with, you know, tricep tendonitis. Like, yeah, you're going to have a hard time shutting the door in the ninth inning. Corey Curtis, News 2, is our guest on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Corey, what's your hot take this week?
I was just thinking about it on the way over here. I think of all the draft picks that he has ever made for the Tennessee Titans, he's had a lot of good ones. He's had some stinkers. I think this year's first-round pick, there is more pressure on John Robinson than for any pick he has ever made before. There is such a layer of stink on this team from that first-round pick last year. I mean, it could be the worst first-round pick in the history of the National Football League. And they have got to get out from under that. And it's got to affect him when he goes into it and thinking, you know, does he take a risk on a player with a high ceiling, or does he make a safer pick because he doesn't want to have 2 years in a row where he just absolutely comes up snake eyes? I think there's tons of pressure on J-Rob with this pick. He's got to get it right. The roster needs him to get it right, and I just think there's tons of pressure on him.
I will say this to back up your point. If John Robinson messes this draft up, it will ultimately get him fired. It won't get him fired at the end of this year, but in 2 or 3 years from now, when you're going to need your 2020 first-round pick to contribute,
yep,
and your 2020 second-round pick, and your 2021 first-round pick, and your 2021 second-round pick, and if those guys just aren't producing, your team will stink. And if that's the case, then you will get fired. So I kind of agree with you. The pressure to hit this pick out of the park, you don't need an all-pro. You just need a starter who is a meaningful contributor with this pick at 22.
Look, if you could bring in a Jack Conklin, that would be absolutely fantastic, okay? If you could bring in even Harold Landry, okay, that would be, you know, a guy. I mean, Harold Landry's played a ton of football for this team and made some meaningful plays. If you could put, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's what he needs to do. He's got to hit at that level or better, all right? He can't have a guy who's on the field half the time, off the field half the time. You know, hey, we think he might be pretty good if he could just stay healthy. He's got to have a guy. He's got to come up with a dude.
Corey Curtis, News 2, as always on our program on Fireball Hot Take Friday. Always good to talk to you, Corey. We will talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Jared. You guys have yourself a great weekend.
Yep. By the way, I should mention before Corey jumps off, right now the Braves are beating the Cubs 4-2, and hopefully we hope that that continues as well. Speaking of baseball, I'm so excited baseball is back. There's nothing like watching a game with great weather, a cold drink, and a little action on my official sportsbook app, the FanDuel Sportsbook app. If you've never bet on baseball before, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. FanDuel is letting new users swing for the fences risk-free. You'll get up to $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. And once you have an account, you can get up to $25 back each day in site credit if your same game parlay bet falls one leg short. This way, you can combine multiple baseball bets for an even bigger win all season long. I love the FanDuel Sportsbook app, and when you win, you'll get your winnings in as little as 24 hours. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with the promo code JGM to get in on the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook promo code JGM. 21 and older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only for a risk-free bet. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Restrictions apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789.
Mike, do you like the mock drafts? Do you read any of the mock drafts for fun?
You know, you can't help but see them. I mean, you can't help but see as you're having a breakfast or a cup of coffee that they run across the bottom. I don't know if I necessarily enjoy them. I appreciate what they do and the time that they put in there. And it's no different than our coaches or our scouts. Everybody's going to have a different view on a player. And, you know, there's never going to be a consent, 100% everybody in agreement that this is how they're ranked. I mean, there's going to be a lot of variances. And so I like what we do. I like how we communicate. I like how we talk through players. I've learned a lot, you know, talking about a vertical ranking and then a horizontal ranking and which player may win out, as we say, which is something that I continue to ask questions about and have discussions about, as does all those guys that John mentioned earlier. So that's the part that I enjoy, not necessarily – you know, I'm appreciative of what everybody does. I mean, they all have an opinion on where the players may go.
That was Mike Vrabel. Ian, do we believe that Mike Vrabel appreciates mock drafts?
I don't know if he appreciates the mock drafts themselves, but maybe perhaps more the work that some of these guys spend in looking and all that kind of stuff.
Did you ever feel like Floyd appreciated the mock drafts?
No, not really.
No. No, it was funny. I used to always joke with him about, you know, like, what would it take for you to watch all the film like you were still the general manager before draft time, and we talk about these things and do mock drafts? And he goes, I charge $400 an hour for that, and I'd be watching film all day, all night. That's how I feel about it. And I was like, okay, that makes sense to me. Now you know why the GM and coach get paid as much as they do. So Vrabel was asked in his little Q&A with the fans yesterday. Mike Vrabel was asked about repeating as AFC South champions. I mean, the one thing I think the Titans maybe don't get enough credit for is that they were, in fact, AFC South champions last year, finishing ahead of Indianapolis. The over and unders are out. They have the Colts at 9.5 wins, the Titans at 9 wins. So Vegas does not feel comfortable about saying the Titans will repeat as AFC South champions. But here's what Mike Vrabel said about repeating as AFC South champions.
Well, I'm always going to be confident in who we are and in our organization and our staff and our most especially our players. But I don't think that we're even there yet. You know, I mean, we're in a conversation of an off season where everybody is starting back over and hopefully trying to find ways to improve on the things they did well and then, you know, fix and make the things that they didn't do well better. And, you know, that's where we're at. That's where our focus will be on Monday, you know, trying to build competent, competitive, complete and consistent players. Like, that's my focus as we start the voluntary offseason program next week that will be virtual. And it won't be about, you know, winning the division. You know, it'll be about trying to make, you know, raising expectations. Like, that is always, that's going to be something that we're going to try to focus on, is raising our expectations and doing the things we did last year, but doing better.
So with that, I asked the question. Vrabel won't answer it. I understand why. Coaches don't answer questions like that. Caroline Fenton, should we look at this season like they should defend the AFC South championship? Or are we in line with the national group think that, hey, Indy, they are building a great roster. Indy, watch out for Indy. How do we feel?
Well, I think that every team should go into every season thinking that they are going to win their division. I think that's how you win games.
Okay, but if we were hosting a show in New York and we were talking about the Jets, we wouldn't be talking about it. You think the Jets should win the division this year? Hey, let's take your phone calls. New York Radio, Hey, do you think the Jets should win the division this year? Let's go to line one. Go ahead. Hey, Stillman, you guys are stupid. You're saying that the Jets should win. The Jets haven't won a game in 15 years. What are you talking about? That's the reaction we would get in New York.
Well, we're not New York. But
you just said every team should think that they should win. Every local market should look at their team and say that they should win the division.
Will they? Will the Jets win their division? I'm going to give that a hard no. Not a hard no. But yes, to your point, I absolutely think that the Titans should go into the season thinking that they should win the AFC South, because why not? They have such a wonderful advantage in this division because they're coming back with a lot more consistency than the rest of these teams. The Jaguars are going to have a new quarterback. The Colts have a new quarterback. The Texans, who knows what in the world is going on in Houston. So I think, yes, absolutely 100%, there is no reason why the Titans should not repeat.
So I'm going to say it in the exact same terms, but maybe be a little bit louder. Yes, Vrabel said that we always want to raise the expectation here. Guess what, Mike? You've raised the expectations. The AFC Championship game appearance and the division title last year raises expectations. It's called sports. Don't like it? Don't live in the big house you live in or have the nice cars you have or whatever it is that you spend your money on, because you've got a lot of it because you're a coach. Because that's the pressure that comes with it. Yes. I mean, again, and to me, the Titans, you can make the argument the Titans are a worse team this year right now. Vrabel is right by saying, look, we're not there yet. I mean, to sit there and talk about defending the AFC South and we haven't even had the draft yet? No, we're not there. But Houston is an unmitigated disaster. The team hates the organization. They don't like the general manager. And the star quarterback, the only good thing going, has, what, 22 sexual misconduct lawsuits coming against him? I'd say that's not a good offseason for them. And they don't have any draft picks to get themselves out of it. So they're, I mean, they literally over under, they are the worst team, the Texans are. So forget about them. The Jags, I'm not going to tell you the Jags will be good in a couple of years because I don't know that. You know, the teams that pick first every year and they get transcendent quarterback, they get number one quarterbacks. Tampa Bay got Jameis Winston. That didn't do much for them. Cleveland got Baker Mayfield. They've been okay, but, it, you know, is Baker really worth all of that? So let's not get too excited yet about Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville. They should be a little bit better, but not much better. And then there's Indy. And the one thing you can say about Indy is that they traded for Carson Wentz. And I think a lot of people think Carson Wentz sucks. Like, I think a lot of people think Carson Wentz is not good. Now, a lot of people seem to forget that he got benched this year. And that they didn't want anything to do with him in Philadelphia anymore, the coach. And that's what got the coach fired. And then Wentz didn't want anything to do with Philadelphia, and so he demanded a trade out of there. But Wentz is no sure thing at all. So I think they should win the division. But the reason they should win the division is almost because everybody else is having a bad offseason. Except for Jacksonville, who's the worst team in the league right now. So yeah, they should win the division. And I know, again, I understand Vrabel saying on April 16th, like, hey, you know, it's a little too early before we get into that. Is it? Maybe. But again, reading the tea leaves, Indianapolis is not pulling a star quarterback out of their rear end. There is no way that their entire season doesn't hinge upon whether or not Carson Wentz is good. I don't even know who the backup is right now in Indianapolis. Is it Jacob Eason? Like, I think he might be the backup because Jacoby Brissett's in Miami. So, I mean, I don't know what, if the Wentz thing doesn't work, I don't know what Indy's falling back on. Titans, I trust quarterback. Titans, I trust running back. The defense should be improved because a lot of people are going to lose their jobs if the defense isn't improved. So, yeah, I think the Titans should win the AFC South this year. And I know it's a little too early, and I don't want to be the guy on April 16th that's demanding jobs if they don't win the South. But I'm just saying, I think they should win this division. They should. That should be the expectation. That should be the goal. How many wins? I can't tell you. But I do not look at the Texans are the worst team in the league, maybe. The Jags are coming off being the worst team in the league. And I'm not convinced Indianapolis is all that better. And again, the scheduling difference. Indianapolis plays at Baltimore. You play at Pittsburgh. I would say I'd rather go to Pittsburgh this upcoming season than go to Baltimore. But if you want to call that a toss-up, you can call it a toss-up. Kansas City comes here. The Raiders go there. That is a decisive Indianapolis advantage. New Orleans and Jameis Winston come here. Tom Brady and the defending champion Bucks go there. A decisive Tennessee advantage. The schedule is practically even. You go on the road, the Rams in Seattle and Arizona and San Francisco. Indianapolis goes to Arizona and San Francisco. Doesn't make much of a difference. Those West Coast games are always hard to win. So, yeah, you should win the division this year. You should. Will you? I don't know. 615-737-1025. We'll get your reaction on that. 615-737-1025. Plus, Mike Vrabel explains the Jim Schwartz hire. Explains why and the role. This should be interesting. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. By the way, we've been telling everybody the NFL draft is upcoming, and we are going to have great coverage. Thursday night of the draft, it'll be yours truly with Chris Sanders, Teron Davenport, and Mark Howard breaking it all down. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on Thursday, April 29th and Friday, April 30th on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Founders Brewery, Apple Collision Centers, and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Be sure to join us on site as 102.5 The Game will be broadcasting live on Thursday, April 29th from 3rd and Home, Germantown's Bar with a Ballpark, and on Friday, April 30th, from Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Jim Schwartz is back as part of your staff, and I say back because he was here from 1999 through 2008. Titans fans know him well, and when word got out last week that he was joining the Titans staff or rejoining the Titans staff, Titans fans very pleased with this news. Mike, can you kind of tell us how it all came together?
Well, I hope they're excited about our staff because I am. I feel that, you know, we have a great staff top to bottom. Jim is somebody that I've known, haven't worked together, but, you know, it was funny as we went through just our conversations. He was basically a quality control coach for Bill Belichick, and I spent 8 years with Bill as a player, and we talked somewhat essentially the same language. And so this process was something that we had talked about since he had finished up contractually with Philadelphia. And it worked out. I think it worked for everybody and what he's willing to do at this point in time and what we'd like to have him do and help us out. He's local here. He loves the Titans. He was excited about coming on board and trying to help us in any way that he could, just like everybody else in our organization.
There you go. That was Vrabel. Somebody texted me when Vrabel was asked the question about, you know, being AFC South champions and said, oh, that was a nice answer from Vrabel. Like, when people ask him questions about Shane Bowen, those are the kind of answers they want. Like, that's total BS, the idea of, hey, you know, it's funny. He worked kind of as an intern for Belichick, and I played for Belichick, so obviously there's the connection there. And there are people that will hear that go, oh, yeah. You know, in that 1995 Cleveland documentary, Jim Schwartz was on that staff under Bill Belichick. But nobody would say, well, why didn't you consider Matt Patricia for defensive coordinator? Or if you guys spoke the same language, why didn't you think about Schwartz to be coordinator or things like that? So all you have to do is to pretend to be excited in your answers and people will leave you alone. I mean, Vrabel sitting there talking about, oh, I'm excited for our staff. Didn't feel that way last week. I mean, maybe if you just didn't have an adversarial relationship with everybody about everything, maybe it'd be a little bit easier.
And I just think it's funny that they called that a nice answer. Like, that was a pretty average, like, the way that a coach should respond.
Well, I said nice answer, so, you know.
Okay, yeah, that's a pretty average answer, I think. But it's funny that in Vrabel speak, that's a nice answer.
Well, and it's also funny because Vrabel never talks about Belichick. You know, it's always like, oh, you know, you take the job. What do you think about Belichick? Well, you know, I was also around Urban Meyer, was also played for Bill Cowher, was also around Bill O'Brien. Yeah, I've been around a lot of coaches. Oh, I don't want to single out Belichick. Now it comes to Schwartz. Oh, yeah, you know, we both, you know, he played for Belichick. And we got it, Mike. We got it. Speaking of Jim Schwartz, we don't know what Jim Schwartz's role is going to be with the defense. And Vrabel was asked about that yesterday. Here's what he said.
Will his role kind of unfold over time, Mike?
Well, I think what his role is just like everybody else, is to help the team, help us win. No job is too small for any of us. And I hope that, and I know, and I'm confident that that's what he'll do. And as he works his way into what we're doing, it's been good to see him, you know, meeting with different guys and meeting with the defense and meeting with me. And, you know, I would imagine that maybe, you know, he would look at players for the draft as we get down here and we get into some pods and stuff, just to get a different set of eyes, a guy that's been around the league for a lot of years and has been successful.
So what do we think his role is going to be?
Just trying to help the team, Jared.
Oh, no. What do we think his role is going to be? Do we think it's like an advisor? Like, is he coaching the coach? Is that his role? Like the, you know, is he coaching the defensive coordinator? I mean, Vrabel, the way he threw that in there at the end with the, you know, maybe he'll look at players and just give us some eyes. And as we, you know, set up some pods, maybe he'll look at some players for the draft. Like, maybe. Like, you're the head coach. You should know what this guy's job is. You should know that.
If you need to hire someone to coach your defensive coordinator to defensive coordinate, then shouldn't that person not be your defensive coordinator?
It's my Philip Fulmer theory of he's not really the athletic director. He's the coach of the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I don't believe in coach of the coach, but sometimes people are hired to essentially be the coach of the coach. And then when the coach got fired, Philip Fulmer got fired at the same time. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Text into the text line. Again, all the Vegas odds makers are saying the Colts have a higher over-under at 9.5 than the Titans at 9, according to BetMGM, which I do not agree with. What text do we have into the text line, Caroline?
Jeff says Jim Schwartz knows Carson Wentz, so the Titans are going to sweep the Colts.
You buy that?
No, I don't.
Why?
I don't buy that because someone who is going to, whose role we don't necessarily know, they're going to sweep the Colts, who's projected to supposed to be better than the Titans. I think sweep is a little bit of a big word. They may beat the Colts in a game or two.
I think Jim Schwartz knowing Carson Wentz maybe gives you a little something. Like, I don't think it's worthless.
It's not the contributing factor that the Titans are going to beat the Colts.
I would also say, how much has Jim Schwartz schemed in his career against Carson Wentz? Carson Wentz has been on his team, so he's never had to scheme against him. I just think that the issues with Wentz are un-Titans related. I just think Wentz is totally in his head. I just think Wentz, you know, all those things that came out about, you know, unspecified players said not a good enough leader, and teammates on the Eagles saying they preferred Foles to Wentz, and TD, who covered that team, going in that locker room saying that he talked to dudes off the record that told him they liked Foles more than they liked him. Or last year when Jalen Hurts got put in there and you had Miles Sanders say, hey, this is the kind of leadership we need. I think that is going to be Carson Wentz's problem more so than I think Jim Schwartz is going to be Carson Wentz's problem.
Do you think that's more of a Carson Wentz problem and not a Philly problem?
I think that it's probably a little bit of both. I think the problem, though, is I'm not sure you overcome that. You know, if you can't stop reading the papers, if you're not a good leader, that's not going to change when you go to Indianapolis. You know, with Ryan Tannehill, it was funny because we didn't know much about Ryan Tannehill, right? Like, he was the starter in Miami, which is as boring of a franchise as maybe there is in the NFL. Take out Don Shula, and the Miami Dolphins are incredibly boring over time. They're not exciting. Like, the Dallas Cowboys may not be very good, but they're at least interesting, exciting on television. We know all their players. Tannehill was really nondescript, you know, in Miami. Like, we would see him a couple of times on TV a year, but that was it. And then Tannehill kind of gets cast aside, and nobody says much about it. And then Rishard Matthews, who played there, goes on the midday show when the Titans make the switch, and he played with both Mariota and Tannehill, and he was basically saying, yeah, Marcus was a good guy. Tannehill's a better leader. And Tannehill immediately changed things when he came in as quarterback. His leadership was evident on the field. You know, with Wentz, it's the other way around. Like, we don't really know much about it because we didn't pay much attention to it because he was in Philadelphia. But the more you kind of hear from people that kind of know what they're talking about, the more you hear, his leader, he doesn't really do it for the rest of his team. And I'm not sure you grow out of that in the NFL. At least I don't think you grow out of it at this stage. Maybe you grow out of it from your rookie year to your second year, but I'm not sure you grow out of it when you're almost 30.
Right. Yeah. I think that, you know, he did enter a very difficult position, you know, coming in after your Super Bowl winning quarterback. There's going to be a little bit of hesitancy from your team. But if you're there for that long and people are still saying, oh, we didn't just prefer Foles to Carson Wentz, we also prefer Jalen Hurts. It wasn't just a one-time thing that, you know, we missed that guy that we won a championship with. They brought in a new guy, and they still preferred this new guy over him. So, yeah, I think that that would definitely pose a challenge in Indianapolis for him.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Preds get beat by a better team last night in Carolina. Better team in the standings, better team on the ice, a healthier team. They've accomplished more as a group. Coming up next, how important is tomorrow night's game? What happens if we see the same thing tomorrow night that we saw last night? How will we feel? That's next. Stillman and Company right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Let me tell everybody, join us tomorrow for the official Nashville Soccer Club pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown at 5 o'clock. Stop by our tent for some game swag and enter for your chance to win a pair of tickets to a future Nashville SC home game. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.